Over the last 20 years, computers and the internet have dramatically reshaped virtually every industry, not to mention the media, entertainment, and business. But look into a school classroom these days, and it might look just the same as it did 25 years ago. Teacher at the front of the class and students sitting at desks with textbooks open. Many textbook companies have tried ebooks throughout the years with two mixed results. Now those textbook companies, along with software makers, are creating artificially intelligent technology that teaches each student at his or her own individual pace. Artificially intelligent technology sounds intimidating to me, but here to help us out with it is Willow Remus. He's senior technology writer for Slate magazine. He joins us from the offices of Slate in New York City. And Will, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Also joining Will in New York City, although she lives here in Kansas City, is Katie Booty. She's the CEO and co-founder of the Lean Lab, which fosters ideas and innovation in classrooms. Katie, nice to have you too.
Thank you.
And here with me in the studio is Jamie Greason, who is the blended learning coach at Crossroads Academy here in Kansas City. Jamie, good morning to you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we started here with the premise that as the internet has changed much of the world around us, that change hasn't really cracked the classroom. Why is that?
Well, I think some of your other guests could probably speak to that as well or better than I could. But one of the issues is that technology in the classroom, if not used carefully and judiciously, can be more of a distraction than a help. If you have students with internet access available, there are studies that have shown that they will retain less information from the course. You know, if you just try to give them all a computer, I mean, this was the idea 10 years ago, put a computer in every classroom. Maybe 3 years ago, it was put an iPad in every classroom. It just doesn't do much unless you have a way of sort of restructuring the curriculum to take advantage of the technology and do something that you can't do in a normal classroom setting.
Yeah. Jamie, what's your take on this, why the internet isn't having more of an impact in all of our classrooms out there?
Sure. I completely agree with Will. We have to hire technology to solve an instructional problem in our classroom rather than just use technology for technology's sake.
Mm-hmm.
So restructuring the curriculum and the instructional models that we have in place in our classrooms are really the best way to utilize technology.
So you need big changes, you're saying?
Yeah, big changes.
Yeah. Katie, what's your take on why the traditional education model has been so resistant to change over the years?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of reasons. I think, you know, in a optimistic approach to try and improve student outcomes for all kids, I think the last 10 years we've seen a real strong inclination to test and measure everything. And I think with that came a little bit of restriction when it came to classroom models. So we've seen classrooms kind of locked down in traditional models of the teacher standing in front and delivering instruction and haven't allowed for a lot of growth and innovative practices.
Because everyone's worried about having to meet the test requirements.
Yeah, I think that's one big barrier.
Yeah. Well, Jamie, what else would you point to?
I would say that in our classrooms at Crossroads, we've really tried to defeat the restrictions of pace in which students learn by redefining our instructional models with the adaptive platforms. So they allow teachers to confer one-on-one with kids. They free up the teacher for those experiences. They also allow for teachers to differentiate in small groups with students. And we've kind of started to eliminate a lot of those issues of just teaching to the test and that whole group instruction causes.
You know, Will, one thing that struck me about your article is this notion that the introduction of computers and tablets in classrooms has had, you know, mixed reviews. A lot of people thought it was going to be a panacea. Some folks say it's actually distracting kids from learning. Is that something that the software developers take into consideration when they're developing their products?
Yeah, absolutely. So what my story for Slate focused on was the sort of evolution that has taken place in the past 3 to 5 years in terms of what sort of technological solutions are being offered in the classroom. So as I mentioned earlier, the idea was, well, just put a computer in every kid's hands and somehow magically, you know, they'll learn stuff that they wouldn't otherwise. There was also a movement to just digitize textbooks, you know, make them e-textbooks and maybe put some little, you know, dancing characters or some little infographics in there that look pretty and that'll somehow be an advance. I think it's become clear that in order for technology to really improve the classroom experience, you have to take advantage of some of the things that a computer can do that a human instructor can't. Mm. And so the new approach that some of the old textbook companies are taking, as well as some startups in Silicon Valley and Boston and elsewhere, is to build software that uses machine learning algorithms to get to know each student. So if you're a student, as you use the software, let's say you're doing math problems, it will try to figure out what concepts you've mastered, which concepts you're struggling with, and it'll actually change the material to try to meet you where you are, to try to deliver the type of problem and the type of lesson that can get you over that next hump and keep you going.
So students then are at very different places inside the same classroom.
Yeah, I mean, this is the famous problem of teaching to the middle, right? You're a teacher, you're up there in front of, let's say, 20 kids. You're trying to teach them all the same thing at the same time. The reality is some of those kids are very advanced. They're picking stuff up quickly. It's all coming intuitively. And they might be bored. You know, they might be willing to race ahead if you just let them. You'll have other kids in there who really hadn't mastered the prerequisite concepts for what you're trying to teach them. They're lost, and at some point they might become hopeless and sort of tune out. And with the way our current educational system works, where everybody, you know, moves up one grade level at a time and is expected to stay on track with all their cohorts, you can really just lose kids entirely that way. They can just decide they're bad at math. They can give up entirely. All sorts of bad outcomes. So the idea is you can use this software to tailor the material to each student. You end up with some students racing ahead, and that's just fine. Maybe they finish the class halfway through the semester and they can go ahead and take another class. Hmm. Other students, when they're falling behind, you know, they just go more slowly, and maybe they take an extra semester to finish the class. But if you're able to restructure the school so that you're not forcing everyone on this conveyor belt to go at the same speed, then you might be able to address the needs of all the students instead of just sort of those 10 kids in the middle.
And Will, just for the record, if it was math class, I'd be the kid who was in the lost category. That's sort of where I spent a lot of my time. But you're describing a whole different model here, where instead of teacher standing in front of a class and lecturing, the students are at their computers and the teacher sort of roaming around and helping kids who have specific questions. Will.
Yeah, there are a number of different thoughts about how best to implement this sort of technology. Now, I'd love to hear from your other guests about some of the ways that they've seen it implemented in classrooms. There was a classroom that I visited at Westchester Community College here in the New York area. It was a developmental math course. It was pre-algebra. And the way they did it was the students would come into class. They would each sit down at a computer, and then they would pick up where they had left off in the material. And they're all at different places in the course. They're all working on their own machines. And the teacher is this kind of roving tutor. So there's no lectures. There's no homework. The teacher goes around, and as students get stuck, the teacher can then sit down with them and kind of one-on-one help them figure out what's going wrong and how to fix it. And the idea is that that's something a computer can't do. That's a better use of a good teacher's time to really meet the students at the place where they need that one-on-one instruction.
You know, Jimmy, listening to Will describe what he's seeing out there, all that sounds like something you're experiencing at Crossroads Academy. Are these programs, you know, similar to what Will is describing? Is that what you're seeing and experiencing right now?
Yeah, absolutely. The ones that are the most powerful are the ones that help students meet their own unique academic goals. And they allow teachers to intervene. So
again, kids in different places inside the same classroom, maybe dramatically different places.
Absolutely. And so it helps capture all of the decisions that students, the best platforms help capture all the decisions that students are making within them, and then say, here are your needs. They can interpret, you know, why a student made a mistake, and then help create that next step in their learning experience.
How effective, how accurate is this software you're talking about here?
Well, you know, that's something that we're trying to figure out at Crossroads. We're pretty new to utilizing these platforms. And so I think that it's going to take time over the next couple of months and even year to compare what we're seeing in these platforms and the data that we're seeing to what assessments and data that we see as truth at Crossroads. and see how they align.
Maybe a bigger question is, how do the kids like it?
So kids are so engaged by technology, and the platforms that are game-like and can give kids continuous feedback are the ones that are the most engaging and motivating for kids. Mm.
Katie Booty, with the Lean Lab, are you surprised to hear that?
No, not at all. I think that very much mirrors trends we're seeing across the board.
I'm wondering how much confidence you have, Katie, in the technology and the software that's out there right now when it comes to this kind of learning.
I mean, I think we're still at an early stage. I think Jamie is correct, where we don't know the long-term outcomes on how this will impact students in the long term. However, I think there's a really exciting dialogue happening around what level of the classroom can be automated to free up the teacher to be more engaging, to provide more choice to students, to provide more experiential opportunities so that students can become, you know, more creators rather than just receivers of learning.
So, Katie, as we sit and talk here today, is it your feeling that we're standing on the precipice of this dramatic new way of teaching our kids? Or what's your sense of where we are? Give me some context here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're at a really exciting time. I think people are pushing boundaries of what the classroom looks like more than ever before. I think the pendulum is swinging back to kind of reacting against this hyper-test culture we've created and to really explore new opportunities for education. So I think, you know, the next 10 years, I don't know what they'll look like, but I think there's a lot of exciting opportunity. And I think places like Crossroads and the work that Jamie is doing is really cutting edge.
You know, Will, I think you mentioned in your article that the software that we're talking about here was developed by a legacy textbook company. Why did the company choose to invest, you know, in this kind of technology? What's the thinking inside that company?
That's a good question. Yeah, the software that I focused on in my story is a platform called ALEKS, A-L-E-K-S. It stands for Assessment and Learning in Knowledge Spaces, although I don't think you really need to know that. It was actually developed by some academics at UC Irvine. And, you know, a few years ago, McGraw-Hill, which is one of the big three educational publishers, was looking at, you know, they were looking at a somewhat dim future for their business. Print textbooks, you know, were not an exciting category anymore. There didn't seem to be a lot of room for growth. One of the big problems with print textbooks from a business perspective has always been that, you know, you invest all this money, you make a new edition, you print it up, you sell a whole bunch of them, and then, you know, classrooms will use that same edition for years. Students, instead of buying new copies, will borrow somebody else's. The rise of online marketplaces made it easier than ever for students to buy used textbooks, which means no money going back to the textbook makers. So they were really looking for a way to reinvent their business. And they seized on this idea of technology, of software. It's called adaptive software. And that means, you know, that in theory, the software is able to respond to what the student's doing and reshape the course material to meet their needs. So they seized on that as a new business model. And it actually has a lot of advantages from a business perspective, one of which is you can actually require every student in every class to buy a new license each semester. So they can't just borrow somebody else's. The upside for the students is, you know, maybe a license only costs $35, whereas buying a hardbound textbook would cost $100.
Yeah.
So a lot of the innovation is being done by startups and in academia. It's coming out of universities like Carnegie Mellon. But then the textbook publishers really see the opportunity. They're buying these startups left and right. Silicon Valley venture capitalists are investing in some of the startups. And, you know, but I should mention, you talked about the quality of the technology. It's really a mixed bag at this point. Hmm. We use the term artificial intelligence. That term gets thrown around. If you talk to anybody in the field of artificial intelligence, they're going to look at a platform like ALEKS and say, hey, you know, this does some neat stuff, but that's not artificial intelligence. I mean, you know, it can tell whether you got the answer to a math question right or wrong. But if you are talking about, you know, an essay on European history, it's not going to be able to understand that essay, let alone give you any kind of valuable feedback on it. And that is a long way away. So we're not, you know, we're talking about technology that's very useful in certain settings, but it's not going to replace human teachers anytime soon, and it's not going to solve all of the problems in every discipline.
And Will, as you describe all this and some of the upsides and downsides of this new technology, having done this long story for Slate, are you convinced this is the future of the American classroom, or is your personal jury still out?
Oh, that's a big question. I think this has to be the future. It has to be part of the future. Again, in some settings, I think, you know, a developmental math course is an ideal test case for this type of software, because the outcomes that you're looking for from the students are very clear. You know, you want them to master a certain number of discrete concepts.
Right.
The answers are either right or wrong. This is the type of thing that a computer can assess very well. I think this is, to me, it's a clear upgrade over the old model of a teacher getting up there and lecturing to all the students and then sending them home to do homework in a print textbook.
Yeah.
Now, if we're talking about whether the future of all education is adaptive technology that, you know, in which the computers are doing a lot of the work, I don't think so. I mean, I could be proven wrong. You know, advances in computer science can sometimes happen in great leaps rather than small increments. But, you know, the reality is that there are things you're trying to teach in a lot of classes that a computer just can't understand, let alone teach. You know, you want students not only to master some concepts, you also want them to learn to think critically.
Right.
You want them
right.
to learn to collaborate with each other. You want them to learn to struggle with something and maybe find a creative way around a problem that they're encountering. And that's something that the software at this point is just not going to do for you.
That's the voice of Will Oremus. He's a senior technology writer for Slate magazine, wrote a long story about this whole notion of artificially intelligent technology. We're also joined by Katie Booty from the Lean Lab, and here in the studio with me, Jamie Greason. She's a blended learning coach at Crossroads Academy here in Kansas City. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. If you parents or educators have questions, we're all ears. We'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Jamie, I have a question here from Clifton who wants to know, if students are going at their own pace, which I think is a great idea, he writes, how are they going to be graded? Isn't the current grading measurement a goal and approach that maybe doesn't work anymore with this kind of approach?
Sure. So one thing that we are using at Crossroads is standards-based grading. So we use a competency-based model. So kids progress as they master skills, and that kind of matches with these platforms.
So you grade them how then?
So we give them the opportunity to show mastery, and we look at a specific skill that they're working on and say whether or not they have mastered that.
Yeah. And it's working okay?
Yeah. We're seeing that students are able to progress at their own pace.
Okay. Katie Booty, a lot of companies have tried going to the ebook route, which hasn't been lauded as a huge success. Why hasn't that worked?
I think to Will's earlier point, I mean, I think our early ebook models were really just automating textbooks. They were just putting text on a page with maybe some little graphics, and they weren't really engaging. And I think our users now and our young people really want to interact and engage with technology in new ways.
So in your view, Katie, is a textbook sort of a dead end juncture here?
I think we're going to see that. I think we really are going to see the use of textbooks minimize more and more.
Yeah. Jamie, I want to get to you here, too. We've mentioned here that there's a certain conservatism maybe in education, a reluctance to jump on something until it's proven. If that's the sentiment here, how do you guys wind up testing products and launching into new products like this?
I think teachers have to view themselves as designers and designing kind of the next version of education. And so we have to view our classrooms as research and design labs and be able to try new things and experiment.
And are they willing to do that? Is your company willing to do that?
Yeah, Crossroads, all of our teachers and our staff have an incredible growth mindset. They're really willing to try new things and experiment and collaborate along the way.
You know, our Clifton had this question about grading, Jamie. I'm just wondering about, you know, a class itself. If every kid is going at his or her own pace. What happens at the end of the year when some kids have learned what they were supposed to and maybe other kids might still be far behind?
Yeah, so we're still expected to teach and assess students on grade level expectations. And so what the adaptive platforms allow for students to move at their own pace, meet their academic goals, while teachers can meet one-on-one and in small groups with students to help them move towards those grade level expectations as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's grade level expectations. So even though a kid might be behind compared to another kid in the class, he or she still might get an A grade.
It depends on whether or not they've mastered the skills of that grade level.
Okay. Well, Will, another big concern here, artificial intelligence developers, they maintain they're not trying to replace the teacher in the classroom, but you can't help but wonder as technology continues to evolve here, could that be a real outcome down the line?
That's an open question. It's an open question in a lot of industries. And education is sort of just one of the latest where there's this concern that automation could take away human jobs. If you talk to the companies that are purveying the software, they'll say, oh, no, of course not. You know, that could never happen. They say what we're doing instead is we're automating the parts of teaching that teachers didn't really want to do anyway, you know, and so the grading of homework is not, probably in the top three perks of the job for any teacher you could talk to. If the computer can take care of that part, and maybe the computer can take care of delivering some of the standardized content that you might otherwise feel obliged to deliver through a lecture, or a Blackboard, then the teacher gets freed up to do the stuff that only a good teacher can do. So in the classroom I observed, there was a student who was stuck on, let's say he was stuck on the product rule of exponents. He just couldn't get it, and the software served up this sort of video lecture that was meant to address his problems, but he still wasn't getting it because the problem was embedded in that video lecture were some concepts that he didn't understand, you know, so he wasn't able to get over that hump with the software alone. Mm-hmm. So he kind of he raised his hand, and the teacher came by and she said, what's the issue? And then she sat down with him, and she happened to know that he's into sports. And so she used an example from sports, I'm not going to be able to recall exactly what that was,
right.
But she put it in terms that he could understand. And then if there was a word that he didn't get, he could say, wait, what does that, Ms. Whelan, what does that mean? And she could explain it to him. And so she was able to put to use these human skills that are just out of reach of software at this point. So in the ideal world, it's freeing up the teachers to do the best part, the hardest part, the most human part of teaching. That said, there is such pressure in educational environments across the country to optimize test scores, to show results. I think one of the risks here is that you can design software that works really well in maximizing a certain type of result, like a score on a math test.
Right.
What if that works so well that schools decide, let's just go ahead and go all in on this software? There's actually at least one school I've heard of in Wisconsin where they cut a certificated teacher position in order to buy more of the software because it was working so well. And so maybe test scores go up and up, but you're almost certainly losing something there that's not captured in a test score when you take a human teacher out of the equation.
Well, we're going to leave our conversation there. What an interesting one it was, too. That's Will Oremus, a senior technology writer for Slate magazine. Katie Booty, CEO and co-founder of the Lean Lab, and Jamie Greason, the blended learning coach at Crossroads Academy here in Kansas City. Thank you all for a great conversation. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.